course, it was one of those things that were like, we've made it easier for you to use our AI tools. You used to have to approve of things for us to use AI, and now we've just turned it on. And they send this like nice friendly email. So I was like, oh, okay, I have to go into my settings and turn all of this off. What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the me getting stuck in travel hell to him getting stuck in travel hell very recently. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
Oh, man.
I would say yours was the higher stakes situation.
At least you
Mine
were getting
was the more
home.
Frustrating day.
Yeah.
Like, I was basically in transit for 26 hours. But all I did was like miss one day of vacation and have to post an episode of podcast later. You had like legitimate stakes, which really blows.
Yeah, man. And like, I don't know, it's not a contest, but when you have an entire travel day that ends in you not traveling anywhere, that's not great.
Not ideal.
I was supposed to be in Jamestown, New York for the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival at the National Comedy Center, which I had a chance to do last year. And it's like, truly my favorite festival that I've ever done. One of those rare times where in a very difficult business, you're like, oh, this is why I do this. Like, I've eaten shit so many times so that I can enjoy these experiences where I'm like in a beautiful theater in front of 1,000 people and like everyone's making you feel really good and there's great crowds and they're taking care of you and paying you well and all that. So very disappointing, but hopefully I'll get to go back up there next year. And God bless whoever had to read the email I sent to Delta, because it was not mean, but it was spicy. I'll say I didn't misrepresent anything that happened. I gave credit in positive ways where it was due. Shout out to the pilot who was making announcements himself at the gate. Pretty impressive stuff.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of spicy announcements and stuff from pilots, when I finally was getting on the flight that I was taking home, there was a situation where like finally we got on the plane, but then of course it started raining more. Mm-hmm. And then we had to just like sit on the runway for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And then what happened was the pilot gets on, makes an announcement, and is like, okay, we're number 6 in the line. Once they start letting planes go out, we'll be the 6th to go out. So, you know, we're going to try to get you out as soon as we can. And then there is an announcement from the head flight attendant, and she gets on the mic and goes, now that number 6 in line could easily become number 10 if you all don't stay in your seats and stop using the restroom. Basically, it's like, sit down like we've been telling you to do the whole time.
That's a real teacher vibe. Like, I'll wait.
So good. Very funny. So, yes, but grumpy travel day shenanigans aside, let's get into some good vibe stuff. And by that, we mostly mean the Olympics, because it's fun and good and great.
Oh, yeah.
And to prepare for this discussion, let's go in the Teal Memorial locker room, a place that never has delays. There's always an open stall and a shower and a towel and whatever you need.
Hey, speaking of which, at least you and I have lounge access. So we do have that going for us.
Very true. Very true. You know who else has lounge access?
Certainly our patrons, our producer-level patrons, and shout out to one patron in particular who upped their pledge.
Yes, yes, yes. So shout out to Samantha Marquardt for doubling their patron pledge. Very, very cool. And shout out to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burridge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry hasn't gotten hot yet, but by the time you're listening to this, I bet he has.
Bang!
Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furuli.
Indeed.
Indeed. I also want to give a special shout out to Salvatore Tessa for letting me crash at his place recently.
Nice.
Thank you, Salvatore. That was very kind of you. And you know who else I would like to thank for helping us out?
Tabs.
Tabs. Shout out to Tabs, because with the power of our sponsor, Tap for a Cause, we can channel Tabs into good. Tap for a Cause is a web browser that you can install into your browser. And then every time you open a tab, you get a heart, and then you can donate those hearts to charity. And that tells Tap for a Cause where you would like them to donate the money that they raise by putting tiny little ads in the homepage. And it's cool. A lot of different cool organizations, very easy to set up. We will do our tab check right now. I'm rocking 3 tabs. How many are you rocking?
Well, I just did my count. I'm at 23, which is a lot of tabs.
Ooh.
But it is a fun number. So I do.
Yes,
like
very, very Michael Jordan relevant. So well
and
done.
And like 7 of
you.
Them are for horse. So I feel like that's
okay.
I get, you know, a pass.
Yeah. I have 3 tabs and they're all for horse.
Well, well, well.
It's okay. I have 9,000 unread emails on my personal email account. So this is the balance. This is the game that we play.
I don't know if this bit is going to work, but I've been trying to work on this bit about how, you know how people always say that like ghosts come back to finish unfinished business? Mm-hmm. I think it'd be really funny if like as a modern ghost, if you want to come back and handle some shit, they make you read your unread emails first.
Ooh, yeah. That's your purgatory is just, you know.
Like before you can get your vengeance, you do have to read 9,000 emails.
I do like the visual of you getting up to the pearly gates and St. Peter's got a big scroll and it's like, DoorDash says you get 15% off your next order of pizza. Would you like to purchase it?
I mean, if that happens, I've for sure gone to hell. So there's, I don't think the pearly gates are involved in that scenario.
Oh my goodness. Yes, yes, yes. So now, unless you are listening on Patreon, where you get access to ad-free episodes, you're going to hear words from a few sponsors to make it feasible for us to not be in the red making this podcast. And once those ads are complete, we will get into the remainder of this episode of Horse. All right, Adam, what's going on in your world? New things on the docket?
Yeah, I do have some new things on the docket. So if you are listening to this on Monday, I'm afraid it's too late and you missed my show in Burlington. So I'll move on to the other stuff that I have going on. I am indeed going to be in Oklahoma for a couple nights. So if you are in the Tulsa area, I will be at the Blue Whale Comedy Festival. That is Friday, August 23rd and Saturday, August 24th. And then I'm also going to be headlining a show in Bentonville, Arkansas. So, I mean, who knows if we've got listeners in that area, I'll be at Bentonville Brewing on the evening of Saturday, August 24th. But here's the other fun stuff I have coming up. As I have mentioned, I will be headlining a bunch of stuff in Albuquerque. That's going to be the weekend of like September 26th, 27th, 28th. I will post more information about that soon. But the new stuff that I have for the DC and Virginia area folks, I'm going to be headlining the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. That is just going to be for one night. It's going to be Thursday, November 7th. That is the week of the election. So it's going to be, we're going to be feeling some type of way, one way or the other. But either way, I would think that laughing is good. So please come out to that show. It might be a fraught time, but nevertheless, that is a show that I am doing. I am also going to be headlining a place called the Brouhaha, which is a comedy venue in Connecticut. That's in Wethersfield, Connecticut, December 13th and 14th. And then this one I'm very excited about. I just locked in another Chicago headlining date for next year. So on Sunday, January 12th, I will be headlining Zany's Old Town in Chicago. I would love to pack the place out. I've got a bunch of, 5 months to promote. So that's going on. And I think that's what I got for now. What about you?
I've got the same crop of shows that I believe I announced previously, but we've got Nashville, Atlanta, New York, Vienna, Virginia, Toronto, Ontario, Boston, New Orleans, Dallas, and Philly. I will be in Philly on November 7th. So potentially fun election times as I'm in the Liberty City. Hopefully it will be good times and not bad times. But yeah, you can get tickets to all those at schub.es/tour. They are all the newest Olympian shows, except for the New Orleans one that is half Potterless, half the newest Olympian. So that's what's on the horizon for me.
It's like a centaur of shows.
Yes. You know, they're fun. They are fun double act shows. They can be stressful on my end, but they're a good time. But, just keeping that policy of if I ever go to a city I've never been to before, got to at least give people the chance to see Potterless.
I think that's
fair. Then if you missed out on it, sorry, your fault, not mine.
It's true.
So what are you going to do? But with that complete, I believe now we can get into NBQ&A. Do we have an NBQ&A?
Yeah, we do. We do. And it's one that we should have answered sooner, but you know, that's not always how it goes. So we're going to answer it kind of retroactively as best we can. This question, the way this works, let me just take you behind the curtain here. We get questions. It's best if you email us. So please do email us questions. That's the easiest way for us to aggregate them. But sometimes we get DMs and other things, and I try to put them in a Google Doc, but then sometimes I save them in ways where I'm like, I don't know what this means. So all that to say, this question comes from someone whose last name is Sedai, S-E-D-A-I. It says Veronica/Cheyenne. Either way, thank you for the question. And the question is as follows. The last FIBA tournament had an unexpected result for Team USA because of the play style used in Europe. So my NBQ&A is this, in two parts, if the first is done before they announce the Olympic team. It's not, but I'm still gonna ask it. Number one, who do you predict will be on the Olympic team, and how does putting the team together work in practice beyond picking the best players in the league, excluding the international ones? Number two, actual Olympic predictions for how games will go and the podium, particularly with how styles differ and how a huge percentage of the front runners for the MVP and other awards are foreign players. So let's start with the first one. Obviously, the team has already been formed, but talk a little bit about how they make those decisions, and also if you feel like there were any particular snubs.
Usually the decisions are made by what the suggestion was here. It's usually just picking the best people that are American. However, there are some factors when you get to like the bottom of the list, just because you will have people who have been in the USA program more. There's a team called the USA Select Team, which is like when you're younger and you're more of basically like the practice squad against the main team when they're prepping for the Olympics or the FIBA tournament. So sometimes people who have been in there for a long time will get the nod. I'm not sure if that's what led to like Derek White getting picked, for example, towards the bottom. I know that is what led to Tyrese Halliburton getting picked because he had done some stuff with the program for many years. So like the coaching staff is familiar with them. And like, I get that. If it's going to be the bottom of the bench position, like I don't think Tyrese Halliburton has like played a second in the Olympics, and I don't anticipate him to do so.
He has played, but he has mostly.
Oh, he has. Okay, I have completely missed it.
Okay, yeah, no, he's played, but primarily in garbage time and just like, you know, for a few minutes here and there. But yeah, he is certainly not going to be part of any sort of like important rotation. Whereas Derek White, who was a late addition, has very much been an integral part of the team. And also part of the answer to that question, and there was some controversy with Jaylen Brown feeling like he was snubbed, and a conspiracy about like, you know,
and we got into that,
the Nike sponsorship, we talked about that. But all to say, Derek White is probably a better fit on this Olympic team, despite the fact that Jaylen Brown is, in my opinion, a better basketball player, because you already have 12 stars. It's best to have someone who's like a complimentary figure.
Yeah.
And that's part of it as well. Now, I was curious, and I don't know the answer to this. Was Jimmy Butler approached about being on the team? Because he feels like somebody who should be.
I don't think he's good enough anymore.
Really?
I would take every person on this team over Jimmy Butler in terms of a better basketball player. He's just, and he's hurt.
Has he ever been on an Olympic team?
Yes, I believe.
I feel like he was, right?
Maybe, or at least he's probably done. But regardless, I think he's not as good. He's hurt. Yeah. But I think another factor that does go into it, you touched on, is style, because I think there are some players that are better that didn't make it stylistically. Most notably, I would say Kyrie Irving and Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson, who was recently announced as captain of the New York Knicks, which is very cool. But both of those players, I think, are better than some of the other people on the team. They're both certainly better than Tyrese Halliburton, without question. However, the style that they play doesn't make sense, because both of those guys are have the ball in your hand kind of guys. And when you already have Kevin Durant and LeBron James and Devin Booker and Steph Curry and Anthony Edwards on the team, like, do you really need another person who operates primarily with the ball in their hand? No, you need someone who can do stuff off ball, or someone who can bring stuff to the table defensively, which those two guys can't do. That's why you have folks like Drew Holiday and Derek White playing really well. Like, they are really excelling. I think if you didn't understand basketball in terms of like impact in the NBA and you were watching the Olympics, you'd be like, Drew Holiday is the best player in the league. Like, he's just good at this particular role. Like, he has, I think, 87 steals per game. So
it seems that way. Yeah. I don't think that's an exaggeration
at all. You just don't need another ball dominant person when you already have like the elite of elite players on the team in terms of like ball dominant guys like LeBron, KD, etc. So you either got to pick someone defensive, Drew or Derek White, or you pick someone who can pass the ball really well, like Tyrese Halliburton. So style is definitely a factor. Other things that can come into play is injury stuff. Like, Jalen Brunson was coming off an injury, so he wasn't going to get picked. And that might be a factor in leading to Jimmy Butler. So you know, sometimes some older guys will sit out and stuff like that. So there's stuff like that going into the mix.
And we've talked about on the women's side, where I would say the biggest snub is probably Arike Ogunbowale.
And the women's side has more of the like politicking, because Ogunbowale has been off the team the past two times. And that was a factor in her not keeping herself in contention this time is because she felt again like it was going to be a, like a politic kind of thing. And that's where you get like more of the longevity with the program and is there the Nike influence and blah, blah, blah. Like there's a lot of people from the Las Vegas Aces. And like, right. I think with the women's team, you get more of the like weird what's going on thing in terms of picking the players. So I think there's certainly more like behind the scenes question marks. Like it's such a, it always seems like there's more going on in terms of like, who are you picking and what there is a selection committee. And Dawn Staley has talked about that because she's been doing Olympic stuff. She talked about how Caitlin Clark, you know, wasn't really a consideration when they were picking it on earlier when they actually had to pick the team. And then Caitlin Clark is like playing really well and leading the league in assists. And all she said was she would be more in consideration. And of course, all the clickbait things were like, Dawn Staley says that Caitlin Clark should be on the team and Diana Taurasi should go die in a ditch. Like
Diana Ditch.
Which is completely taking herself out of context. But there is a selection committee. Nice. Very nice. There is more of a, I think, drama surrounding of picking the women's team. But also, I think it's kind of harder with the women's team because even if you play like fantasy women's basketball, it is just kind of like guards and then like forward slash center. Yeah. It's less rigid in terms of the positions in the NBA. Whereas in the NBA, you're like, cool, we need some point guards. We need some shooting guards. We need some wings. We need some centers.
Right. And also like Taurasi is there, number one, out of respect. Obviously, she's still a great basketball player, but like essentially, yeah, the way this has gone is that she's been starting every game. And again, I think part of that is like
she's still playing
that,
very well,
but she has not been finishing a lot of the games, partially because they don't need her a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And also just because I think that's kind of like the plan for the rotation. So by the end of the game, you see her with like one of those things around her waist, like you use when you're lifting weights. Like, you know what I'm talking about? It's like the athletic cummerbund, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. The athletic cummerbund.
I'm sure that's not the term, but I'm gonna use that. So
it is the episode title, so that's chill.
So real quick, and we're kind of morphing NB Q&A with full court press here to give you a prediction, and here it is. I'm gonna say it. We are now in full court press. Get it like the news.
See what yes I do there. Get it. I do get all it, because we're gonna answer part two of this question, which
exactly.
is
exactly
who's gonna win.
Yeah, so obviously this would have been more compelling if we had done it before the tournament began, but where things currently stand is that we are recording this on Wednesday, August 7th. By the time you all listen to this, everything will have been decided. The finals will have taken place over this past weekend. But right now on the men's side, we are heading into the semifinal round. So yesterday, the U.S. beat the piss out of Brazil.
We did.
I think it was a 45-point margin of victory. France beat Canada, which not everybody was expecting. Germany beat Greece, and then Serbia beat Australia in a very, very close game in which Nikola Jokic put up a pretty Herculean effort and had a near triple-double. So
yeah, let's not harp on that one too much. Otherwise, producer-level patron Polly Burge will be very upset, because I think Australia, didn't they have like a really big lead, and then they kind of
I think they lost in overtime. It was a very, very close game. But tomorrow, what we're going to have as we record this, France and Germany play in the first semifinal, and then the U.S. plays Serbia in the second half. Now, going into the tournament on both sides, I think the expectation is that the U.S. men and women would win. I still think that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
I kind of want it to be U.S. versus France.
That'd be fun.
In the final, so that we get to see the U.S. team versus the likes of Wembanyama and Rudy Gobert. It's also really fun that the U.S. is now playing Nikola Jokic tomorrow. I think that could be pretty interesting. I still think the U.S. will end up winning that game pretty handily.
Yes, I agree. I don't know. I think they will win. I would prefer France, because I think it would be a more dramatic final.
Right.
But I think Germany will beat France, because Germany, as we saw with the FIBA tournament, they just have this like roster that's like really been playing together for a very long time. And I think they just have a really solid amount of chemistry.
Yeah.
But I think the French team has that as well. And Wembanyama's playing phenomenally.
Yes.
So I think it'll be a very close one. My instinct would just say that Germany would win. And then that the men of the U.S. would beat Germany in the final.
Right.
But I want it to be France, because then
it just
if
seems
we
more fun.
Defeat France, yeah. I mean, if we defeat them in the final in front of their home crowd.
As they boo Joel Embiid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Joel. Yeah.
On the women's side, as we record this, the quarterfinal games are actually happening presently. So two have been completed. Belgium defeated Spain by 13 points. And Australia, shout out to Polly Burge, defeated Serbia and got some vengeance there, because it was the same matchup on the men's and women's Sweden side, they won by 18 points. And then remaining to be played are Germany versus France, the women, and then Nigeria versus the U.S. I fully expect the U.S. to win that game pretty handily. Germany, France, who knows? And then the semifinals will be played on Friday. Any big predictions on the women's side?
My prediction would just be that it would, as long as the brackets align, because I'm not looking at like who plays who and stuff, if it does line up to where the US and Australia could face each other in the finals, that would be my guess. Going into it, those were the two teams that I thought were the best. Australia has some really solid players that are in the WNBA. They have legend Lauren Jackson still playing at age 43, Seattle Storm legend. They do have like three Storm players, which is cool. They got Lauren Jackson, they got Izzy Magbagora, and they have Sammy Whitcomb.
Love it.
So that's pretty cool. And former Storm player Jade Melbourne, who's now on the Washington Mystics. So the Australian team, pretty solid. And they had like a really gutsy win earlier in the tournament. So like they've been a fun team. I would say it would probably be US versus Australia, and then apologies to Australia. I'm not concerned about them. Just the women's team. If you're watching the women's team, it's just like absolute domination. Like even that game against Japan, where we were like only winning by 10 in the first half and Japan was like shooting only threes and shooting 43% from three. I remember Kelly was watching the game with me and she was like, this is kind of close. And I was like, yeah, Japan's not going to shoot 43% from three for the entire game.
The thing. It's like to beat either U.S. team, a team has to play pretty much perfect basketball for 40 full minutes. And it's just that doesn't happen.
Yeah. When you have Asia Wilson and Brianna Stewart on the same team, what do? Except cry. It's just you're just constantly, especially if you're staggering their playing time, you just constantly have someone in the paint that is going to destroy you offensively and defensively. And then, you know, you've got guards running all over the place, just, you know, Jackie Young playing elite defense, Kelsey Plum playing elite offense, Jewel Lloyd draining threes. Like, it's just, what do? It's like fighting the Hydra. Yeah. Like, you just try to stop one head and then there's another head over there making a pull up jumper.
Now we've got the real crossover that people have asked for.
Crossover. Those are my thoughts. I've been very much enjoying watching these teams play. The vibes are very good for both of them. It's cool to see the men's team be very supportive of, for example, Kevin Durant became the most scoring Olympic basketball player. He passed Lisa Leslie, I believe.
Yep.
So he made a really nice sincere post thanking Lisa Leslie and calling her a legend, which was awesome. And then the dudes just took like a team photo like outside somewhere where they were just kind of like all, you know, just in their sweats and everyone like had very much like their facial expressions on. They were like, some people are trying to look cool, steps in the back, ear to ear smile. So that's been fun.
Also, Devin Booker has like an old school camcorder and he's just like filming random stuff. I don't know if you've seen any of that. I'll try to post a link if I can find it. It's very fun.
Because that's what's really cool is they've been going to every other sports things, which is fun to see like the basketball team interact with the other sports. They had the footage of when they were on the boats to go in for the opening ceremonies. They had Anthony Edwards talking to the women's table tennis team saying he could score a point on them and then being like, you could not score a single point on us. He's like, you wouldn't beat me 11-0. He's like, we would beat you 11-0. And then 2 days later, he's like in the crowd dapping up the other basketball dudes as they cheer on the women's doubles table tennis team. It's incredible. There was the cute thing of there, you know, every player gets like a pin for their sport and people are trading their pins around. And Steph wanted to trade his pin with, I want to say it was a guy in a fighting sport. I don't know if it was like judo or fencing or something. And then the guy was kind of like nervous about it. And they asked him why he seemed to hesitate in agreeing to trading his pin. And he said, because he already had promised it to someone else. But then Steph Curry asked and he was like, it's Steph Curry. I'm going to go. Like, come on. So it's been very cute. And then, they were all at Simone Biles's performance. I think they're just the whole, like the team all around final. They were there for that and they had their camcorders and videos and stuff. So it's been really cool to see them support, especially because the U.S. men's basketball team stays separately. They don't stay in the Olympic Village, which is understandable because when you're that tall, I don't know that those cardboard beds that you get are going to be great. So they're staying in a separate hotel.
Also, security wise, like with all due respect to everybody else involved, these people are incredibly famous and incredibly wealthy and like literal assets to the teams that they are playing for in the NBA.
So, like we all love Stephen the Pommel Horse guy, but we didn't know who Stephen the Pommel Horse guy was until 2 weeks ago. People know lots of things about LeBron James,
right? Nor did we know pole vault penis man. And you know he's having quite a week.
He got shafted, but what are you gonna do?
Hey, there we go.
So Yeah, it's cool to see them interact with the other athletes and be at the other events. So that's been very cool. So it's been fun.
Olympics are great.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff going on in the Olympics. So that's been that. Any other full court pressy type things before we kind of progress onward to...
No, I think let's get into it. Great. This is our first like kind of old school episode in a while. We've been doing a lot of interviews mm-hmm. of late, a lot of special episodes, which frankly I think we will do more of going forward. But we are back to the old format. So
yeah,
shall we get into it?
Yeah, the one final thing I will say, just from like outside of Olympic world, or two things. One, in Olympic world, Devin Booker is like giving out his shoe to people who are wearing Devin Booker jerseys in Paris. That was very fun. There's a couple of videos of him doing that.
I love that.
And then two, non-Olympics, the ongoing like TNT TV deal situation seems like it's heading towards TNT not getting it. They're suing, but like it seems like a lawsuit that they're doing just to try to maybe get like bought out. Right. And
well, they matched the offer that Amazon had presented.
Right. But what Charles Barkley said on a recent episode of Podcast P was that what the NBA is trying to say is you could have matched one of the other TV company deals, but not the streaming one. And the TV ones, like the ESPN Disney one and the NBC one, are like $500 million more a year. So, and Charles made a great thing. He said, I don't think Adam Silver is stupid enough to lose the lawsuit. So I feel like we're going to be okay. Especially he used to be a lawyer. So like, I'm sure they're going to be okay. But it does seem like this will be the last season of Inside the NBA. I don't know if it's going to be recreated in the future. I don't think Ernie Johnson would leave TNT. I don't know. Like, Charles is still under contract with them for like 7 more years. So whatever it is, we just have to watch every single episode of Inside the NBA this year and just cherish it. Like, I'm going to legitimately like schedule it. I might buy cable for a year. Like, whatever it takes for me to be able to watch TNT for a year, I'm going to do it. I'm not kidding. I'm watching every episode.
It was indeed, it was terrible news.
It was terrible. It was terrible. But now let's get into the other stuff.
All right, shall I start with my 3-on-3?
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3. 3, 2, 1, 3-on-3.
All right, so for today's 3-on-3, not to be confused with 3x3, which is apparently how the international community says it, I thought it would only be right to do something Olympic-themed. Now, one of the talking points that you'll hear the most if you've been watching Olympic basketball is that the competition now is much steeper than it once was, as basketball has become a more global game. So, for example, and I think we mentioned this on a previous podcast, when the famed Dream Team bulldozed their way through the competition at the 1992 Barcelona Olympics, they faced 9 NBA players from other countries on their way to that gold medal. This year's team will face 61. So obviously there's been a big change. And actually that Dream Team had a lot to do with the sport becoming as global as it has become. Now the same can be said on the women's side, perhaps even more so because there's always been more balance since players have often made more money playing outside of the US than in it. Now both the men's and women's teams have been pretty dominant this year, but they certainly aren't blowing out teams to the same degree that they did in years prior. So today I wanted to talk about the 3 biggest blowouts in US Olympic basketball history on the men's and women's side.
Cool.
So before I begin, a couple of interesting facts. Unlike men's basketball, which was first added to the Olympics in 1936, women hoopers had to wait 40 years to get their first opportunity in 1976. Shout out to inaugural ballers. In that inaugural effort, the U.S. women lost their first ever game in Olympic competition to Japan. They would go on to win the silver medal in 1976 and would not take home their first gold until their next opportunity in 1984, after both the men's and women's teams sat out the 1980 games during the Olympic boycott. Meanwhile, on the men's side, the U.S. team did not lose a game in its first 7 Olympics and suffered their first loss in Olympic history in the gold medal game in 1972, where they lost to the USSR by 1 point in a controversial and heartbreaking finish that is still talked about to this
day.
Brutal.
Shady.
Doug Collins is still sad about it, and I don't blame him. Honestly, it's a brutal and shady loss. I'll post a video to it. It's too much to explain. We probably already talked about it before, but it's, yeah.
We definitely did. I think we did on that Andrew Marinus episode where we talked about his book about the inaugural ballers.
Yeah, I would think so. Also worth noting, part of what made the 1992 Dream Team so compelling was that it was the first time the NBA players had participated, because prior to that, it had always been the top college stars due to eligibility rules that rendered athletes ineligible once they had become professionals, a rule that was overturned in 1988, but the full effects of were not really felt until 1992. But, all right, history lesson over, and now, like Mike Schubert changing a poopy diaper, let's get to the blowouts.
Heyo.
Gross, but I couldn't resist. I will start on the women's side, and as always, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/horsehoops to check out the expanded 5-on-5 after this episode drops. So, coming in at number 3, the third biggest blowout came during the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, where the U.S. women defeated Mali by 56 points, 97-41. Some of the stars of that team included the likes of Sue Bird.
Let's go.
Sylvia Fowles, big year for avian names. Lisa Leslie, towards the end of her WNBA career. Candace Parker in the summer before she began hers. Tamika Catchings, Tina Thompson, and of course, Diana Taurasi. In this particular blowout, the scoring was really spread around as Lisa Leslie led the team in scoring with just 16, ooh, one of five players in double digits.
Very distributed.
No team got within, yeah, very, very, very distributed. And that's kind of a common theme that you'll see throughout a lot of these blowouts. No team got within a 15-point margin of defeat during those Olympics, and the U.S. team capped off their dominant gold medal run with a 27-point drubbing of Australia in the final game. Apologies to Polly Burridge once again. At number 2, we have to go back to the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia, where Team USA defeated Zaire by 60 points. This team featured icons including Lisa Leslie, Rebecca Lobo, Dawn Staley, and Cheryl Friggin Swoops. Unfortunately, I had trouble finding the full box score for this one, but according to what I could find, Jennifer Azzi, am I saying that right? Azzi? Azzi? Do you know this person?
I don't.
She led the team in scoring with 18 points. I had not heard of her, but if you look her up, she's had a wildly illustrious career. She's in the Hall of Fame, and she now actually works in the front office for the Las Vegas Aces.
Oh, so very cool.
Nikki McRae led the team with 8 rebounds, and Teresa Edwards led the team with 5 assists. Certainly not jaw-dropping individual performances, but the 107-47 final score is pretty astonishing.
That's nuts in a women's game, because they play...
Just anything over 100 in a women's game.
Yeah, they just play shorter...
Really, really,
I don't know how long their FIBA game quarters are, but like that is wild efficiency.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The 96 women's team would go on to capture the gold medal, defeating Brazil by 24 points in the gold medal game. Much like the 2008 team, no team got closer than 15 points to them throughout their entire run. But at number 1 on our list, we don't have to go back very far, because in 2016 in Rio de Janeiro, the women's team defeated Senegal by 65 points in their first game of group play, 121-56. This team featured some of the greats we've already mentioned, like Bird, Taurasi, Catchings, and Fowles, and also featured the likes of Maya Moore and, of course, Stewie, aka Brianna Stewart. In this particular game, despite putting up 121 points, no player scored more than 15 for the U.S.
That's wild. Look how the distribution of wealth amongst the team.
Truly, it really speaks to the depth of that squad, because Stewart, Taurasi, and Fowles each had 15, but they were 3 of 7 players in double digits. Griner and Fowles both chipped in with 7 rebounds, and I'll give you one guess as to who led the team with 8 assists.
Sue Bird.
Sue Bird, indeed. In 2016, no opponent would get closer than a 19-point margin of defeat, and the U.S. women coasted to another gold medal, defeating Spain by an impressive 29 points in their final game. Let's move over to the men's side, and Shubes, just off the top of your head, which team do you think is responsible for the largest margin of victory?
I think I know the exact game, but it's gonna, this feels trick question-y, but I think somewhere on this list is going to be the U.S. versus Nigeria one.
Yes, that is correct. And, I don't want to give it away, so I'm not going to say what year that is yet, but I would have assumed that 1992 would have been the year that the biggest blowout came in, but it was not.
I wouldn't have.
Interesting.
I would assume it is later just because of pace of basketball and like in the future. So you wanted me to guess like which year's team had the biggest blowout?
Yeah. But you were
right. I was thinking it was that game, because like I think in the 92 game, like the pace of play in the NBA was still like very slow in the 90s.
That's a good point, because they dominated, but the point totals weren't as inflated as they are now just because scoring wasn't as high. So that's, yeah.
And the lack of three-pointers. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I was actually listening to a podcast yesterday that was breaking down the greatest games in Chicago sports history, and something that I found fascinating. We've talked before about the iconic game where Michael Jordan scored 63 points against the Celtics in the playoffs. In that game, he didn't shoot or make a three. There were 2 3-pointers attempted by the Chicago Bulls in that game. And that's a game where the Bulls scored like 150
probably both
points.
Like, yeah. I bet they were like full court heave buzzer beater ones too. Like they weren't even real threes.
It's pretty wild. how much the game has changed. But at number three on the list, in shockingly their only appearance, the 1992 Dream Team defeated Angola in their first game of group play by 68 points. Yes, and this was one where like all the Angola players were just like happy to be there. They're like taking photos with everybody after the game. They're asking for autographs, all that stuff. In this particular game, Charles Barkley led the team in both points and rebounds, scoring 24 points and grabbing 6 boards, while Magic Johnson led the team in assists with 10. Mm-hmm. Amazingly, Michael Jordan scored just 10 points in 18 minutes of action, as he was one of 6 players in double digits. Yeah. But for reference, and we've talked about them before, this team's roster was an absolute joke. I guess technically the weak links were Christian Laettner, who was like the token college kid in his summer before joining the NBA, and Chris Mullin, who was pretty nasty.
No,
in
Mullin
his own
was
right.
good. It would have been Bird. Yeah, Mullin Bird and Magic were too old to be.
I'm
on
just
the
saying,
team.
Like comparatively, yeah. But the other members of this team, and you mentioned Bird and Magic, were Clyde the Glide Drexler, Charles Barkley, Jordan and Pippen, Karl Malone, Barf, Patrick Ewing, and David Robinson. Good luck being Angola.
Well, that was the, this is the famous quote where when before the first game was played, they asked Charles Barkley about it. And Charles said, I don't know nothing about Angola, but Angola's in trouble.
I feel like that morphed into a Shaq impression, but I'm going to let it slide.
Yeah, I just feel like back in the day, he didn't have his classic like. He wasn't like, let me tell you, Kenny, that I don't know nothing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Young Charles Barkley spoke quite differently. But that was that. Yeah. Charles also got a flagrant foul that game, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
I think he elbowed an Angola dude in the face for trying to box him out too much. And a fun fact about Charles, ridiculous. A lot of people don't know this. He was the leading scorer on the Dream Team.
Yeah.
People will always think it's Jordan, but it was Chuck.
I don't think that the young generation realizes just how good Barkley was.
No, they really don't.
I really don't think they do. Go right now, and maybe I'll share a link to it. Just look up young Charles Barkley highlights, and it's... Other than maybe like Shaq on the Magic and his early days in the Lakers, it's hard to think of... someone that size being that agile. It's like fairly absurd.
Well, he's sick. It's weird. He's like big, but he's only 6'4".
Right. Yeah, that's true. I guess, but he's like burly is what I'm saying. Like he was so strong. I mean, the round.
He was like Draymond Green before Draymond Green.
Now, in that 1992 run, the closest any team got was in the gold medal game where Croatia gave us a real run for our money, losing by 32 points. At number two on that list, and I did not see this coming, we have the 1956 Olympic team, who defeated Thailand by 72 points. Now, again, at this time, everyone on the roster was an amateur, so these were college players. But Mike, there was a tall fellow from the University of San Francisco who played on this Olympic team. Any guesses?
Oh, did he go on to become an NBA player? Is this why I would maybe know?
Oh, yes. Quite an illustrious one.
University of San Francisco. Man, yep. I'm just going to, in 56?
Yep.
So he would have been born in like the 30s? So he... Gosh, so if he was playing in the NBA, it would have been back in the 50s.
Who was the best big man of the 50s?
Wilt? That's not, no.
Bill Russell.
Oh, Bill Russell, yeah. Wow.
It was a 22-year-old Bill Russell.
I was going to say, yeah, Wilt, that's obviously, he was much older. That would have been way too old. Bill Russell, I didn't know he went to San Francisco.
Yep. And the team, he's actually from the Bay Area, I believe.
Okay.
And the team also, it's like one of those things where we associate him so much with Boston because that's obviously where he ended
up. Yeah, just assume he's from the Northeast.
Yeah. The team also featured Russell's future Celtic teammate, Casey Jones, who was a great NBA player. It was Jones and then like a bunch of people I've never heard of. Maybe they were great in their time, but I don't know who they are. There are no stats available for this particular game, but I can report that the 1956 men's team defeated its opponents by an average of 53.5 points per game, a margin of victory that has never, and in my opinion, will never be surpassed. In their first three games, they defeated Japan by 56, Thailand by 72, the second highest margin of victory ever, and then beat the Philippines by 68, which is tied for the third highest margin of victory with the aforementioned Dream Team's drubbing of Angola. The 56 team would take home the gold without much resistance, defeating the USSR in the gold medal game by 34 points, which brought down their total average of margin of victory.
So
pure
funny.
Domination at its finest. But finally, at number one, and you called it, we have the 2012 team who defeated Nigeria by a genuinely disrespectful 83 points during group play. This team, of course, followed the now famous Redeem team of 2008, who led the U.S. back to glory after an embarrassing showing in the 2004 games. This 2012 team's roster is almost as absurd as the 1992 teams and the current team. The roster was headlined by LeBron, Kobe, Carmelo Anthony, Westbrook, Harden, and Durant, prime Chris Paul, a young Anthony Davis, and less jaw-dropping but still impressive members, Darren Williams, Tyson Chandler, kind of the Derek White of that team, and Andre Iguodala and Kevin Love. In this particular beatdown of Nigeria, the clear offensive star was Eurohoops aficionado, ya boy, Carmelo Anthony. Shubes is doing the hitting a three into the side of your forehead move, who scored 37 points on 13 of 16 from the field, and even more impressive and absurd, 10 of 12 from behind the arc. Russell Westbrook chipped in 21, and four other players scored in the teens. Then we had Anthony Davis and Kevin Love tied for the rebounding lead with six, which sounds unimpressive, but in fairness, there weren't a lot of opportunities for offensive rebounds, given that the U.S. shot a blistering 71% overall from the field. Darren Williams led the team with 11 assists in that game. And while you might be assuming, based on all of this, that this blowout means the U.S. team wasn't challenged that year, quite the contrary, the team followed up this dominant performance with a narrow 5-point win over Lithuania in the following game. And despite making it to the gold medal game without a whole lot of challenges, the U.S. team defeated a juggernaut Spanish team by a measly 7 points in the final game. That Spanish team featured Pau and Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Rudy Fernandez, and Jose Calderon, and they gave the U.S. team an actual run for its money. But there you have it, the biggest blowouts in U.S. Olympic basketball history. And now it's time to move over to your That Actually Happened.
Yes, before we do, I just want to say my favorite quote from that, because after the game, the media accused Coach K of trying to run up the score and embarrass Nigeria. And it's just an all-time quote that I think I've said on the podcast, but it's just so funny. Coach K said, quote, "We didn't play LeBron and Kobe in the second half. And with Carmelo shooting like that, we benched him. We didn't take any fast breaks in the fourth quarter and we played all zone. You have to take a shot every 24 seconds. And the shot we took happened to be hit." Just an all-time quote. Like, by Damn. The rules of basketball, we Mic must drop. Shoot it. And we just made most of those shots. Apologies.
Incredible.
So, yeah, good stuff. Glad to have that be shared. And I'm glad that you went with a very Olympic-themed 3-on-3, because my That Actually Happened is not Olympic-themed, but it's one that I've just been kind of waiting to cover on the show, but we just, as we've said, haven't done a standard episode. I met Tobias Harris in an elevator. That actually happened.
Yeah, you did. You did.
So,
Tobias Harris over me?
Tobias Harris over me in the elevator because he's very, very tall.
Literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he's a tall man.
So let me take you back to the first round of this season's NBA playoffs. And the New York Knicks, my beloved New York Knickerbockers, were playing the Philadelphia 76ers in the Northeast Corridor Series. They're taking the Amtrak up and back. And that is kind of what sparked all of this. So I was in New York City and I was going to be hanging with my buddy Johnny, who was a consultant for his first couple of years out of college. And he had accrued loads of points with hotels and all this kind of stuff. And to celebrate his 30th birthday, him and his wife were going to do a little staycation at a fancy hotel in New York City. Mm-hmm. And that was the plan. He had like a reservation on like this cool like rooftop bar that they've got. And the plan was Kelly and I were going to go and hang out on the roof with them and just chill and enjoy the really cool views. Like you can see the Empire State Building from it and you're like 80 something floors up. Really cool. Now, as I am walking to this hotel, it was the Ritz-Carlton, so a very, very fancy one. Mm-hmm. As I am walking to this hotel, I am texting friend of the pod, Sally Tamarkin, who's a big Sixers fan, because the 76ers had just posted something on social media that they had just taken the Amtrak into town. So this is before the series had actually begun. Mm. I believe this is before game one. I think game one was set to be on either Sunday or Monday, and this was a Saturday. So I remember texting the link to the Instagram thing of a picture of like Tyrese Maxey getting off of the Amtrak and being like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool to be in the Amtrak with Tyrese Maxey? Because I take Amtrak a lot, Sally takes Amtrak a lot, and we're just like, how cool would it have been to just like accidentally been on this train?
Why did they take a train?
It's just so much easier. Like the Amtrak to Philly to New York is super easy. I'm sure they got like business class suites and everything, but like, it's so easy. You don't have to deal with traffic. Like, yeah, it's quick. It's way easier than dealing with an airplane. The team probably saves a bunch of money in terms of like shipping all the stuff and not having to like check a bunch of bags. So I think Amtrak is, it's definitely common for Sixers, Knicks. I don't know if they also do it like for Boston, but like, I'm sure it's easier than dealing with a bus for something that quick. Like the Amtrak's only like an hour between New York and Philly.
Yeah.
So They took the Amtrak. I'm texting Sally about this, and Sally said that they had they had been texting me a story back and forth about like a time that like them and their partner, they were in a hotel and they happened to be with some other, like, I think they were at the hotel where the Sixers were at. I was already texting about like meeting Philadelphia 76er players in a hotel because of this Amtrak thing, not thinking really anything of it. But that was like literally the conversation I was having with Sally at this moment in time.
You spoke it into existence.
Spoke it into existence. So Kelly and I then arrive at the lobby. And at this point in time, Kelly is quite pregnant. I am always trying to be a COVID safe boy. Like, I still wear masks basically anytime I'm indoors, just because like, why not? It's not that hard. I don't care that I look silly with a big duck looking mask. They're very comfy. So we are in the hotel lobby. We got our big goofy duck masks and N95s on. And when we're in the lobby, I see a couple people in like Philadelphia 76ers official gear. And I was like, oh, I bet the Sixers are staying at this hotel. This makes sense. I just saw the Amtrak thing. Like, that's funny. And it was just someone who, like, they just looked like they were maybe like a coach, or not like a high enough profile coach, like maybe an assistant coach I didn't recognize, probably someone on like the equipment right. team, or like a very, very specific coach, something, maybe like a trainer. It was just someone in like athletic-y, but you can tell they're like official Philadelphia 76ers athletic sweat gear. Right. So when I saw them, I was like, there's probably a chance. I was like, but I don't know. Like, what are the odds? I don't even know if the team is here yet. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a special elevator. Like, who knows?
Right.
So we hit the button to get in the elevator. And it's one of those like things where you like put in what floor you're going in, and then they like do the math of like elevator to get you in, like, you know, the high efficiency but more complicated elevators.
Sure.
And however it worked out, we like got in the elevator with a different like Sixers official person, and it goes down first and they get off. So I guess there was like maybe the fitness center or something was the floor below. So they get off. And then when we come back up, because it stops in the lobby before it's going up, the doors open and there's one person waiting to get on the elevator. And it's Tobias Harris. And he's just standing there by himself. I don't think he even had like any bags or anything. He was just standing there. And then I already knew Tobias Harris was a very nice guy. I had seen interviews with him and video footage and stuff. But he sees me and Kelly wearing these big masks, Kelly very visibly showing that she's pregnant. And he asks us, oh, do you want me to get the next one? And we were like, oh, no, no, no. Like, that's very kind of you, but you can get on. He's like, are you sure? And I almost said, no, Tobias Harris, come on the elevator. Like, yeah. Obviously, I want this to happen. If you were like actively coughing up a lung, I might consider you still getting on the plane and just pray that my mask works. But he does end up getting on to...
Very nice move, by the way. Like, yeah. I don't think that most people would think to ask that.
No, it's super nice. And like, this is a thing people would maybe ask like early COVID days. But, you know, this is a story that took place in 2024. So like a lot of people, like Kelly and I, will be the only people wearing masks on a plane or at a concert or whatever. So it's long past like being polite enough to do something, like, heaven forbid people inconvenience. I, like, in peak of COVID, people, there were a couple of people in our apartment building who would like get into two people who like screamed at us for us insinuating that we would like to take the elevator alone, which was the official rule of our building. Like, they had signs that were like no more than two people in the elevator, and people would try to get in. So it's not like we were asking for a ridiculous request. We were just asking them to like follow the sign, and like two people like erupted on us. So for Tobias to do this in the year 2024 was super duper duper nice. So we get into the elevator. We're going like all the way up to like the 60th or whatever floor, because it's like the rooftop bar thing. He was going up. I won't say what floor it is, just because I don't want to like dox them in case they stay on the same floor. But it was not as high of a floor. But it was just me, Kelly, and Tobias Harris sharing an elevator. And I asked him, I was like trying to be cool, because I don't want to be like weird. So I didn't want to like ask for a photo or an autograph. Like, this dude just traveled on an Amtrak train. So the first question I asked was, I was like, how's the Amtrak in? And I realized like I didn't do anything to like signify that I knew who he was.
Do you feel like he just like knew that you knew?
I would assume based on the question, because it like took him a beat. But I'm sure he gets recognized so often that like you would just be in a constant thing of like, if like you would just have to be in a world where you understand, like, there's a good chance most people know who I am, especially like...
Well, how tall is he?
He's 6'8".
Yeah,
6'9", dude. So like, and especially like, I don't know. I feel like I look like someone who watches basketball. You know, like I'm the right demographic.
Sure.
So he said like he just, you know, kind of like chuckled and said it was good. And then I said, like, I'm glad you guys beat the Heat. Like, I didn't want to play Miami. I'm glad you guys won, which I immediately felt awkward about because I was not in trying to insinuate.
Yeah, then it sounds like you're saying like, oh, you're an easier matchup.
Right, but what
Miami.
I was trying to say was like, the Heat injure us every time we play them, so I didn't want to play the Heat. So I think actually the second thing I said was, I think I asked how the Amtrak was. He said it was good. And then I said, are you excited for the game, Sunday or Monday, whatever it was? And he was like, yeah, really looking forward to it. And I was like, yeah, you know, we're excited as well. So glad you guys beat the Heat. Didn't really want to deal with playing them. And then he kind of laughed at that. And then door opened and he was gone. And I just said, you know, Kelly and I both said like, have a nice day, you know, kind of thing. And then that was it.
You didn't say good luck because you didn't want to lie.
Exactly. I did not say good luck. I said like, have a good day. It was very intentional that I was still like a true Knicks fan where I didn't say like, have a good game. Hope it goes well. No, like I hope you have a good day today. And I hope you have a terrible day tomorrow in a dramatic loss to the New York Knickerbockers. So was just very, very polite. But he was, the fact that he asked, do you want me to catch the next one, was just like, my heart melted. It was so, so incredibly nice. So
Very nice.
We take the elevator up, and then, of course, my buddy Johnny's a huge basketball fan, so I tell him, and we're, like, freaking out. I relay the whole story and everything. And, again, I won't say what floor they were on, but I said, Tobias Harris got off on this floor, and Johnny goes, I'm staying on that floor. And I was like, Johnny, you're staying on the floor with the 76ers. Now, maybe this makes sense, because Johnny had basically comped tickets by using points. I'm sure the 76ers are, like, have some sort of deal with the hotel.
Do you think they all stay on the same floor?
I don't know if they all stay on the same floor.
I would assume they would try to get them on the same
floor. Yeah, they would at least like clump it together where like maybe they're on floors, you know, like in rapid succession with each other or something. And I wonder if like the Ritz-Carlton hosts every team that's playing the Knicks, or they have like specific deals with specific teams, like the Sixers every time they play the Knicks stay here. So it made kind of sense that like someone on a comp ticket basically was also on the same floor as other people on, I'm sure, comped or some sort of special reserved tickets. So I tell this to Johnny, and basically I was like, you should just kind of like keep your eyes and ears perked up the whole time you're staying here, which was just for like that day into the next day. But it was like, you might end up seeing a bunch of Philadelphia 76ers players. Like, they're going to be on your floor. Yeah. So then I ended up hanging out with Johnny on the roof, and you know, we went home. But then I got some text messages from Johnny regarding the Philadelphia 76ers afterwards. So that night he texts me, saw a dude in the elevator in a 76ers hat. I asked, are you affiliated with the 76ers? And he said, I am. And I said, what was his job? And Johnny said, I asked him, are you Nick Nurse, who is the coach? And he said, I am. And then Johnny said, I'd had some drinks, so at this point, I'm like, I'm so happy you beat the Heat. Congrats. I'm from upstate New York, but I'm not even a Knicks fan. So then Johnny said he also saw Kelly Oubre during his time there. Cool. Oh, and then the next morning, he saw Nicholas Batum. He didn't talk with Oubre or Batum. Oubre was like too far away. Batum was wearing headphones. But he had a little conversation with Nick Nurse. So I got to meet Tobias Harris. My buddy Johnny got to Nick Nurse and see two other Philadelphia 76ers players, all while I was texting Sally about the phenomenon of sometimes seeing NBA players in hotels. And that actually happened, and it was very cool. And Tobias, like, I don't know that I've ever, he's probably the tallest person I've ever had a conversation with, but like, I know people who are 6'8 or tall. He's so tall.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm in an elevator with Kelly, who's 5'2". Like, he's so tall. He's a foot and a half taller than Kelly.
It's also funny that like, in a scenario where somehow Kelly was like meeting up with you guys later, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume that if she had been on the elevator herself, she would have been like, that's a tall guy.
Oh, but like if it was just Kelly,
like,
and not
that's
the two
Tobias
of us.
Harris. Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah. If she had like described a tall person being in her elevator, if she arrived later, I would have been like, it's probably a Philadelphia cinema. Like, I would go through the photo, of, like, which man was it? Who was it?
Maybe she would have asked him about scaffolding. Like
Clay. Yeah. And it was very funny because then Kelly and I ended up watching basically every Knicks Sixers game that series together. And she was like kind of rooting for Tobias Harris because he was so nice. And I had to explain, like, he's this really nice guy and he's like, okay, but he gets paid a lot of money, so people are really mean to him. And I was like, but he doesn't really perform well in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. So I kept saying, like, you know, I'd be very okay if every single game was Tobias Harris doing very well and the Sixers losing. But then he just happened to play poorly, and then the Sixers ended up losing the series to us.
Yeah, that would have been funny if you'd been like, I wish you well, but I hope your team loses.
That is how I felt. And then I was like, of course, just by me being a person I am and this being, like, truly the first, like, extended interaction I've ever had with an NBA player, like, I was running through the brain of like, oh, I should have said this. I should have done that. I should have blah, blah, blah. But like, I think for the most part, I kept it cool, asked and said more unique things than just like, I love you're so good, or like anything awkward.
Didn't ask
for a photo, didn't ask for an autograph or anything. So I felt like I kept it pretty chill. I did feel a little squirmy about maybe not wording the thing right about them beating the Heat, but I, you know, whatever. So I was proud of the interaction and that it could have been way
And you
weirder.
Didn't even have to almost chase him into a bathroom like Patrick Beverly at the
Exactly, airport. Exactly. So it was cool. And all in all, this is just to say that Tobias Harris is as nice as advertised, and I feel even worse for the vitriol he has received. Being as good of a basketball player as his contract would suggest, I wish him the best in Detroit, and I appreciate him for being a nice dude. And that actually happened.
Love it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse Horses, hosted by Adam Amwala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Campomanes. The art is by Allison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry hasn't gotten hot yet, but by the time you're listening to this, I bet he has.
Bang! It was the fuse just had to take some time to light. That's
heating up, and then the bang. I get it. Also, hi Trish, Chase Underulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby the Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furley. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops, and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops, because
Horse Hoops was run by that guy on Angola that Charles Barkley elbowed, and then he was like, you know what? I'm just going to get this Twitter account banned. That's how I'll show Charles
I'm
Barkley.
Burn it down.
Yeah, just burning it down.
I get it. You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to all of the stuff we talked about today, including some fun Olympic highlights.
Yes. And if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops and get access to a bunch of bonus content. You can get horse stickers and other fun goodies. And then if you go to horsehoops.com/merch, you can get SupNerds shirts and digital items. Lots of good stuff there. But we're going to conclude this episode, as we always do, by putting our hands in the middle and saying something at the count of three. I know this episode's coming out afterwards, but I would love to cheer on the men and the ladies once more to hopefully bring home 2 gold medals.
Well, then we've only got one decision to make. It's time for a reference from 25 years ago. On three. I love gold!
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
Do you know what I'm referencing?
It's a gold, Austin Powers gold member?
Yeah.
All right. I love gold on three. 1, 2, 3.
I love gold! The taste of it, the smell of it, the look of it.
Yeah. I definitely saw it once.
They probably could have stopped after one.